Well, good day, my friends. Welcome to this next 30 minutes of sharing together around the scriptures and thinking about creative and wonderful ways in which you can use the whole of your life, everything that you are and have, in order to bring God glory and to show God's glory in the world and to fulfill God's call upon your life in whatever place you may find yourself. And remember, your work can be worship. Well, you're tuned in to Radio Pulpit, your companion in the search for meaning, and I'm your host, Dr. Dion Foster, and this next 30 minutes, you'll be tuned into the show, The Ministry and Me, and it's always wonderful, wonderful to be able to just think about ways in which we can use all of our lives in order to bless God. And, you know, just in the last week or so, I was considering this thing that sometimes we need to be converted, reconverted in order to serve God more fully. We need to be converted from the extraordinary to the ordinary. I think sometimes we miss the miracles of God because we are looking for massive things to happen. We're looking for fireworks and thunder and lightning, and God's doing miracles all around us. And you know, the same can apply to your life and ministry. Sometimes we think that in order to be obedient to God in ministry, we have to be in some kind of full-time servant capacity, whether it's in a church or serving in a hospital or wherever it may be. But the good news is, friend, today that as you're listening, God wants to use exactly where you are today, the relationships that you have, the place where you work or where you study or where you live. God has a will for that particular place. And I want you to be so certain of that today as you listen to this show, because I'm hoping that something of what we discuss today will help to just raise your life to that next level of servanthood, so that every moment of every day may be a gift to God. Now, just to say, if at any stage during the program you'd like to phone one of the folks in the Radio Pulpit studios, maybe just to have a prayer, or maybe there's something you'd like to talk about, then you're welcome to do that. I'm going to give you that telephone number in a moment, and I'll also give you my email address. I always love hearing from you. Over the years, I've received literally hundreds of emails from people emailing me about all sorts of things. Sometimes they just want to say hi. Some of them want to just say, hey, Dion, we're praying for you, or Megan and your kids, Liam and Courtney. Sometimes folks just want to make contact to ask a question or ask for prayer themselves. And folks, I love hearing from you, so I'll give you my email address in a moment. But first, let me give you the telephone number for the Radio Pulpit prayer and counseling line. If you phone Radio Pulpit on the Pretoria dialing code 012-334-1200, I'll give you that number again. It's 012-334-1200, and there'll be someone waiting to speak to you. And if you want to drop me a line, please do so. Fire up your email client and send me an email. And you can do so by sending the email to digitaldion@gmail.com. And I'll spell that for you. That's digitaldion@gmail.com. digitaldion@gmail.com. And I promise as soon as I get a chance, I'll respond to you. Now, today I want to talk about a subject which I think most of us have to deal with very frequently, and that is dealing with conflict in a Christian manner in the real world. Now, language, my friends, can be an incredibly, incredibly conflict-causing thing. You know, I remember some years ago for the first time reading that wonderful book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. I'm sure most of you have heard about it, and really I would encourage you to read it. It really is a wonderfully insightful book about how men and women view the world so differently. But it reminded me of a conflict that my wife Megan and I once had. You know, I came home from work one day, and after we'd had dinner, Megan went off to the kitchen to wash the dishes. And while she was busy washing the dishes, she said to me, you know, you never help me with the dishes. And, you know, what she was communicating as a woman was, she was communicating, ladies, I'm sure you can identify with this, she was communicating an emotion. She was saying, hey, man, I want you to share some of these tasks with me. I want you to lighten the load. And I don't want you, I feel a little bit like I'm being taken for granted here, and I don't want that. Well, of course, as a man, all that I heard was not emotion. I heard this fact, and I heard the words never and dishes. So I went searching through my database in my head, and I remembered that in 1992, I'd washed dishes with her at an auntie's house. And so I said to her, hey, that's not exactly true. I remember in 1992, I helped you to wash the dishes. Well, my goodness, she exploded, and she said, what? You think that it's good enough to help me with dishes once every decade. And boy, oh boy, we entered into a rip-roaring fight on that day simply because we were communicating in different languages. She was trying to communicate an emotion to me, which I was struggling to hear. And I was hearing facts and communicating facts back and so invalidating her emotions. And I wonder how many conflicts in the world are caused because people don't know how to deal with one another properly. Well, the good news is that God has a very particular will about how we as Christians should deal with conflict. And as you're listening to this program today, you may know of a conflict that's going around you that God's calling you to minister into, or you yourself may be embroiled in a conflict with someone or an organization that God is calling you to bring some resolution to. And that's why you're tuned into the program today. Now, I want to read firstly from Philippians chapter 4 in the New Testament. And I'd encourage you, if you have a Bible, please read with me. And I just want to read the first 7 verses of Philippians chapter 4. This tells us of a conflict that Paul was addressing in the church at Philippi. And Paul says, "Therefore, my brothers, whom I love and long for, my joy and crown, stand firm in the Lord, for you are my beloved. I entreat you, Euodia, and I entreat you, Syntyche, to agree in the Lord. Yes, I ask you also, true companion, help these women who have labored side by side with me in the gospel, together with Clement and the rest of the fellow workers whose names are in the book of life. Rejoice in the Lord always, and again I will say, rejoice. Let your gentleness be known to all mankind. The Lord is near. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and with petition, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which passes all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus." Oh, that's a wonderful passage. Now, I'm sure many of you never realized that Philippians chapter 4, "Rejoice in the Lord always, I will say it again, rejoice," that passage actually comes about in a situation of conflict. How about that? Now, according to the FBI, some of their statistics about violence, I tried to find some South African statistics about violence by contacting our local police station, but I got into a fight with them. Now, I'm just kidding. That's not true. But these statistics came from the internet. They say that there's one violent crime every 24 seconds in America, an aggravated assault every 48 seconds, and a murder every 23 minutes. I mean, that is absolutely amazing. In fact, during the Vietnam War, more people were murdered from violent crimes in America than were lost in the whole of that war on the battlefield. Isn't that a shocking thing to think about? Now, I think that if we were to look at the South African statistics, we would probably find something very similar. Furthermore, the damage that anger and violence cause is not limited only to physical violence. A far more pervasive and very destructive outcome of anger can be the havoc that it wreaks in relationships about every kind. In fact, almost 50% of divorces are accounted for because of unbridled anger as the primary reason for the breakup. And there are many, many marriages, and I'm sure many of you know of marriages, or you may be in one yourself, where there is a great deal of emotional separation because people are not connected to one another. They've become angry, and so they have separated themselves from one another. You know, children are often wounded. About 80% of them who are wounded by anger, unbridled anger, become abusers themselves. And how many times have we heard of people losing their jobs or losing a friendship or a relationship because they simply didn't know how to deal with anger? I think you'll agree with me. Certainly, I find that anger is a real, real problem. I wonder how many innocent lives have been lost to anger. You know, I read an amazing story in Bits and Pieces, a magazine. It says, "Years ago, a large statue of Jesus was erected high in the Andes on the border between Argentina and Chile." I visited both those countries. Truly beautiful. And it was called Christ of the Andes. And the statue symbolized a pledge between the two countries that as long as the statue stood, there would be peace between Chile and Argentina. And certainly, shortly after the statue was erected, the Chileans began to protest because they believed that they had been slighted. And what was the reason? Well, the statue of Jesus had its back turned towards Chile and the face of Jesus turned towards Argentina. And just when tempers were at their highest, the Chilean newspaper saved the day. In an editorial that not only satisfied the people, but made them laugh, the newspaper writer said, "The people of Argentina need more watching over by Jesus than the Chileans." Now, most importantly, friends, you know, we need to realize that God has his eyes on us, and truly God does watch over us. And I wonder, when God looks at you and the way in which you deal with conflict, how does God feel about that? Maybe it's conflict with your spouse or with your children or with people that you work with. How does God feel about the way in which you deal with conflict? You know, Jesus summed up all of the commandments with this wonderful summary. He said, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, your mind, and your strength. This is the first great commandment. And the second is like it: love your neighbor as you love yourself." And the greatest of crimes in the kingdom of God are always crimes that are committed against love. To slander another person, to carry a grudge against someone, to bear some resolvable hurt, to gossip about someone you've never even bothered to engage with the truth. So let me ask you, how is your IQ? And I'm not talking here about your intellectual quotient, I'm talking about your irritation quotient. When you are driving, how often do you use your car's horn, your hooter? Number one, rarely, if ever. Number two, as needed, perhaps once a day. Number three, it's the most used part of my car. Okay, let me ask you another question. At a restaurant, how often do you complain about food? Number one, never. Number two, if it's cold and there are too many bugs in it. And number three, regularly, I go out into my car and I blow the hooter until I get it right, and that's when I come in and eat. While you're waiting in a queue at the supermarket, one, do you visualize quietly and pray for peace in the world? Number two, do you count the items in everybody's baskets, and particularly if they have more than 10 items, shake your head? And number three, do you threaten anyone who looks as if they're going to pay in their queue with a credit card by using coupons and counting all your money from your piggy bank? You see, friends, the truth is this. Christians have to know how to deal with conflict. And there are three things that I want to say about Christians and conflict, which you may not have realized. The first thing that I want to say is that you need to recognize that not all disagreement is bad. Only disagreements that lead to discord, brokenness, and struggle. Secondly, sometimes disagreements are necessary to get things done right. You know, I often think about it. When Megan and I disagree in our marriage, often it's a very healthy thing. The reason why we have our disagreement is because we recognize that there is a stumbling block in the road of our love for one another. There's something which is hindering us from living together in happiness and freedom, and sometimes we need a little bit of emotional energy to help to bring that issue to the fore, to give it the time that it deserves, and to get it resolved. So not all disagreements are bad. Sometimes, in fact, they're necessary to bring issues to the fore. But the third thing that we need to know about Christians and conflict is that there is always two sides to the story. And very often we have as much to confess as the person that we are engaged with in conflict with. Now, there must be some good way, some fruitful way, some God-honoring way to deal with conflict. And the good news is that there is, and we read about it today when we read from Philippians chapter 4, verses 1 to 7. Now, if you'll notice, Paul did not specify the disagreement between Euodia and Syntyche. Rather, he did specify that agreement was possible. Now, we don't know if their conflict was due to style. Maybe Euodia had a more analytical style of dealing with things, and Syntyche was more emotional and intuitive. But the reality is, when you differ in the level, but you know that you're serving on the same team, it doesn't matter what your style is. When you stand together, you can face any problem together. Now, the reality is that Paul gave them a couple of wonderful bits of advice about how to deal with conflict. And I want to share those with you. Now, the first thing that Paul said to them in order to resolve conflicts in a godly manner is that we must remember that the truth is that the vision, big vision, makes for little arguments. Isn't that a nice way to think about it? Paul's first call to them to resolve the conflict was to say, remember the truth that big vision makes for little argument. We read about this in verses 2 and 3, where Paul is calling Euodia and Syntyche to focus on what is important. He uses the words contented, and in some translations it means to struggle side by side. It's a military term which is used for joint service, and Paul uses the same words when he exhorts Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 2 verse 4, saying no one serving as a soldier gets involved in civilian affairs. He wants to please his commanding officer. Now, what is it that's so interesting about these verses? Well, the reality is that these two women were not living up to the meaning of their names. How about this? Euodia means prosperous and blessed journey, whereas Syntyche means pleasant companion. Here were two people that Paul says were truly wonderful, loyal companions in winning people for Christ. And they once had a reason to live together and to work together side by side, but suddenly something had gone wrong. And the thing that seems to have gone wrong is that they had lost the plot. They had forgotten what the big picture was, and so they were yapping at one another. You know, I have a wonderful friend here in the Helderberg, Neil Varmenhoefen, who says that the churches a lot, and communities and marriages often are a lot like those hunting dogs. You know, the ones I'm talking about, who go out into the veld to chase the fox. And he says, while the dogs are waiting for the fox to be released, they're yapping at one another, they're biting each other's tails, and they're engaged in all sorts of petty squabbles. But the moment you release the fox, the moment you give them something to chase after and to live for, suddenly all of their problems and worries are put aside. And in fact, not only do they run in the same direction, but they follow one another and help each other. Now, isn't it incredible that people will spend energy, time, creativity, and hard work to plan things that don't really matter? They'll plan things like savings for a holiday, or maybe to buy a new house or a new car, but they don't plan for the most important things in life. They don't set aside creativity and energy to plan for a big vision in their relationships. Have you ever thought about that? How much time have you ever taken to sit down and say, what is the fox that my husband and I must chase together? What is the fox that my children and I must chase together? You know, I discovered this recently, that my daughter Courtney has a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to win her friends for Jesus at school. And so what I've started doing with her is I spend just a little bit of time praying with her about her various friends. You know how that's changed our relationship? She and I are much closer to each other, and we have a same focus. We're caring for the people that are around her. And that's just given us such a new vision, a new way of relating, and it's helped us to relate to one another much more clearly. Now, the question I want to ask you is, in the situations where you find conflict, whether it be at work, in a working relationship, or at home, or wherever it may be, what is there that could be a bigger vision than the issue that you're facing? Maybe you need to pray and say, Lord, show me how I can stand side by side with this person rather than facing them in conflict. Does that image make sense to you? And that's what Paul is saying. So the first thing that Paul says, in order to overcome conflict as a Christian, we need to understand that a big vision makes for little argument. The second thing that Paul calls them to is he calls them to remember the truth that there are no private leaks in a boat. Isn't that a lovely thing to think about? There are no private leaks in a boat. You see, when Paul hears about the conflict, he decides to call on the help of a friend, someone whom he can trust with the conflict. And he calls on one of his friends, a fellow yoke fellow, a companion. In other words, this was someone who shared his values, who knew his dream, and whom he could trust to be honest enough to sort things out. The principle of no private leak in a boat reminds us that when we're in things together, we work together. If all of us were in a boat and we discovered that there was a leak at the foot where someone else is sitting, you wouldn't think to yourself, geez, I'm not going to mention that leak to Mike because he may ask me to help him to repair it and I'm already too busy, hey? Rather, you think, I'm going to let Mike know that there's a leak at his feet because if this boat fills up with water, we're both going to drown. You know, that's one of the problems that I often see in marriages. People are too afraid to commit themselves, and I see it in working relationships as well, to commit themselves with time and energy to resolve problems that are in their best interests to resolve. You know, Matthew 5 verse 22 says, but I tell you that anyone who is angry with his brother is subject to judgment. Paul puts it in Ephesians 4 verse 26. He says, in your anger, do not sin. You know, the philosopher Aristotle once wrote, anybody can get angry, but to be angry with the right person for the right reason at the right time and to the right degree, now that is not easy. And I want to encourage you today, my friends, to think a little bit about how you can deal with anger and how you can deal with conflict in a manner that shows that you stand with the person that you are in conflict with, that you stand on the same thing, that you're facing in the same direction, and that if it hurts them, friends, then as a Christian, it also hurts you. You know, I remember a young couple once coming to see me, a couple that I'd married many years ago, saying that when they fight, he, the husband, always wins and the wife always loses. And I asked him one day, I said, you know, and we'll use fictitious names here, hey? I said to him, David, how do you feel when you win and Michelle loses? And he said, gee, I feel good that I've won the fight. And I said, Michelle, and how do you feel? And she said, nah, I feel humiliated. And I said, well, what is the outcome of David always winning and Michelle losing? And she got a little smirk on her face and she said to me, you know what, Dion, he may win the fight, but every time he wins, he sleeps on the couch alone. And I thought to myself, yep, that's a situation in which neither person wins. And so I want to ask you today, in the conflicts that you know about and the issues that you're facing in your sphere of influence, in your church, your relationships, your home, your business life, where is there a leak that affects you? And remember the principle, there are no private leaks in the boat. And that's what Paul was reminding Euodia and Syntyche. In the kingdom of God, we are all related to one another. And when there is conflict and anger, it affects all of us. Now, the final thing that Paul reminds these two people is not only, number one, does a big vision make for little argument, not only, number two, that there is no private leak in a boat, but the third thing that he says is we must never confuse an ally with an enemy. Paul reminded Euodia and Syntyche, the loyal yoke fellow of the other Christians, that they were on the same team. And the reality is, friends, that we are all more or less in the same boat. Most of us have the same struggles, the same insecurities, the same needs, the same desires, the same hopes, the same joys, and the same struggles. There are very, very few people who have the luxury of not struggling in the same way as others. Certainly, I face the same struggles as most other people face. You know, conflict can be an incredible cancer. The university where I did three of my degrees, Rhodes University, had a wonderful, wonderful theology faculty. But because there were such incredible struggles between some of the academic staff, eventually the churches stopped sending their students to that university. And today, if you go to Rhodes University, there's no theology faculty there because the faculty eventually closed down. You know, anger can be a cancer like that. It can destroy marriages, it can destroy families, it can destroy businesses, it can destroy many, many good things. So the question that I want to ask you today is, who is there in your sphere of influence that you are in conflict with, where you are confusing an ally for an enemy? Just because we're different from someone, it doesn't mean that we have to be against them. So friends, let's go back to where we started. The thing that we need to recognize is that conflict is necessary and it's a real part of life. But as Christians, you and I have a responsibility to deal with conflict in a godly manner. How do you think God feels when he looks at the conflict situations in your life and in your sphere of influence? How are your relationships going? Have you got a big vision that makes for little argument? Have you got the courage to deal with the leaks in the boat? Because remember, there's no private leak in a boat. And are you willing to stop making your ally your enemy and to find some way to relate to them? And maybe you need to begin to pray for the enemy that you think you have. Maybe you need to approach them in love and ask someone, a third party perhaps, to come and sit with you, whether it's a husband and wife, a parent and some children, and find a way to overcome your differences for the sake of Jesus Christ. Well, friends, I want to encourage you. Go on the journey. Begin the journey of finding godly ways to resolve your conflict. And I can guarantee you, not only will God be glorified, but you too will be blessed. I want to encourage you, why not phone the Radio Pulpit prayer line or counseling line if you've got an issue of conflict that you're struggling to deal with and you need some help with that. You can phone and speak to someone right now on the Pretoria dialing code 012-334-1200. I'll give you that number again, 012 0800-334-1200. Or why not drop me a line at digitaldion@gmail.com. That's digitaldion@gmail.com. And I'd be very pleased to stand with you in prayer and ask God to bless you and help you as you face conflict for the sake of the glory of God and the transformation of the world. Well, thanks for tuning into Radio Pulpit, your companion in the search for meaning. You've been listening to Dr. Dion Foster, and this show is The Ministry and Me, and it's always a wonderful blessing to share these times with you. And remember, all of your life can be an act of worship and used as ministry to glorify God. Have a truly blessed day. God bless you. Goodbye.